sunshine in this home. Only dark exit wounds.
Welcome to another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie, and the only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that's rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. We have told you guys that we are going to do this review for at least 6 weeks. We were supposed to do it in September. We had to move some things around because of our guest schedule. We couldn't do it in October for obvious reasons because of spooky season. We are now finally doing the review of Exit Wounds. The boss man, Steven Spector, is here. Spector, you picked this movie and kept delaying the review.
It's my fault. I apologize to the listeners of the podcast out there. It is 100% my fault. It is not the fault of Carrington and Rob on the Bad Movies, Good Opinions, or whatever it's called podcast.
We are getting close to episode 50. You actually were on episode 2 of the podcast.
Such a great movie.
This is the third appearance.
Second appearance.
Yeah, no, you've done Too Fast, Too Furious. You've also done Into the Blue.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, you've done
Into the Blue. I remember we did Into the Blue. I did not remember doing Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah, we've done Too Fast, Too Furious.
Now out on Netflix.
So now this is your third one. What is the worst movie that you've ever seen in the theaters?
Hangover 3. For people who listen to this podcast, I went with Danny Parkins, and we saw it on the Plaza, for those of you in Kansas City listening, and we walked out. It was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
No one likes Hangover 3.
It's so bad.
Hangover 2 is not good, but Hangover 2 is at least passable. No one likes the third one.
It was so, so bad. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but that's the worst movie I've ever seen in theaters.
What's your least favorite candy?
What are those, the circus peanuts? That's a candy, right?
Yeah, that's a candy.
Okay, that circus counts. Peanut should be gone. Just okay. Gone from the ether.
We're doing Exit Wounds. This movie came out in 2001. It has a rating of 5.6 on IMDb. The description, Orin Boyd, a tough cop in an inner city precinct, discovers a web of dirty cops and corruption. You don't need to tell
Classic.
Me too much more about a movie than Steven Seagal plays a cop trying to clean up the Detroit PD. That's the great premise to a movie.
That's why I owned it on DVD.
This movie came out March 16th of 2001, had a budget of $33 million, made $80 million in the box office, $79.9 million. This also seems like a movie that cleaned up in rentals. This is also a movie that cleaned up on DVD.
Who's not getting this movie at Blockbuster on a Saturday night? Blockbuster had to still been around in 2001,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Blockbuster okay. was definitely
All
around
right.
in 2001.
I didn't want to age myself too much.
We were definitely renting movies then. I was renting movies from Hastings back in college.
Oh, for sure. I was bringing my portable DVD player on the plane.
That was a big deal back then. If you had
a portable DVD player, you had some money.
Wealth. It was absolutely wealth. So the box office that weekend, Exit Wounds debuted at number one at $18.4 million. Enemy at the Gates debuted at number two at $13.8. The Mexican, starring Brad Pitt, was at $8 million, came in third place.
So bad.
C-Spot Run was fourth that week, is $5 million. And at fifth, 15 Minutes at $4.3 million. That was the box office that week for Exit Wounds. Let's go through the cast of this movie. Steven Seagal. Gall is the lead. He is Detective Orin Boyd. DMX is Latrell Walker or Leon Rollins. Who is he to you in this movie? Is he Latrell or Leon?
He's Latrell.
Isaiah Washington is in this movie. He is Detective George Clark. Anthony Anderson is TK Johnson. Michael J. White, he is Sergeant Lewis Strutt. Bill Duke is Chief Hinges. And Jill Hennessy from Law & Order, she is Commander Annette Mulkey.
You're not going to stop there. There's one more big name.
Tom Arnold.
Thank you.
Tom Arnold is Henry Wayne. Tom Arnold should have been in more movies. Every time he's in a movie, he plays the exact same character, the exact same role, and it works every single time. Spec, before we get into the plot of the movie, I just want to add this point. We need more movies like this. Somewhere along, maybe it's just because superhero movies got so big or big blockbusters have gotten big, we have gotten out of 90 minutes, very thin on plot, just ass whoopings, explosions, and gunfights. This movie, it has a little bit of a plot, but this movie is just gunfight, all right, a little bit of talking. Explosions, a little bit of talking. Car chase, it basically just repeats that for 90 minutes.
I feel like you and I grew up in the same era of movies. I feel like that was all about 1995 to 2005. The Rock, Con Air, simple plot, 90 minutes, explosive action. I feel like right now we're in this era of like really dark action movies. I'm with you though. Like, I don't need that much of a plot. Give me some good action, a little bit of intrigue, a little bit of humor, and I'm all good. Exit Wounds, checks all three of those boxes.
I think that this time in movies just might be over because there's no way you would go see this movie in the theater. Like, we went through the box office. This movie cost $30 million to make, and they made $80 million. Studios will sign up for that all day. There's no chance this movie makes that level of money at the box office in 2024.
Yeah, but I think the way the world is working, I'm watching this movie on streaming within the first 2 weekends it gets released.
100%.
So, well, I guess what are the studios really asking for? Are they asking for the box office dollar? Or are they asking me to watch the movie? If this is on Netflix in 2024, it's this upcoming Saturday, you have my 90 minutes.
So the movie Exit Wounds starts with the Vice President of the United States. He is giving a speech on gun control, and Steven Seagal is showing up late. While leaving the location, Steven spots that something fishy is going on. We learn that the police are tracking the Vice President's vehicle. Attack, shots fired, a lot of them. The Vice President's motorcade is under attack. There's no need to fear, though. Our cop, Orrin Boyd, is on the scene, and he is here in a blaze of glory. He saves the Vice President's life in the middle of a shootout by tossing him over a bridge. But he doesn't get rewarded for his efforts. He gets yelled at by his bosses, and he gets sent to the 15th. I knew this was my kind of movie when, in the middle of the gunfight, Steven Seagal takes no fire, takes no damage.
Nope.
He then grabs the Vice President of the United States and just says, hold your breath, and throws him over a bridge.
And he gets rewarded by going to the 15th precinct in Detroit. Detroit's worst precinct. To be fair, though, if you're going to start a early 2000s action movie, saving the Vice President's life on a bridge in Detroit is not a bad way to go. I didn't hate the opening scene.
No, I didn't hate the opening scene either. I think it just lets you know, like, the opening scene sets you up. If you are turned off in any way, or if that's not the kind of movie you want, don't worry. They have seven more of those scenes.
You will know that this movie is not for you.
So the 15th is very chaotic. Mr. Boyd will fit right in, but our guy's reputation precedes him. There's no need to worry, though, because he's a happy guy, and everyone would be as lucky to be as happy as he is.
Come on back in. The guys love you. Everybody's tearing the tops off their desks.
Who the hell are you?
Henry Wayne, Detroit AM.
This friend of yours?
Yeah, they're friends of mine. Listen, go back to class.
If I go back there without you, they're going to kill me.
Yeah, but if you stay here, they might kill you too. So go back to class.
Jeez, well, no! Well, shit! Come on! All right. I don't even know this guy. Sir, stay the hell out of our class. We got people in there with real problems.
What did you think of the sort of running bit about the anger management course? It comes up a couple of times in the movie. This is our first introduction. What do you think of this scene?
I thought the group therapy scene when he first gets introduced to Tom Arnold was funny. Then he tries to not be angry when he beats up the people hanging around his truck. It was necessary for the movie, but not one of the strengths of the movie.
I wish we had gotten more Tom Arnold in this movie. Like, I'm guessing if we look at his screen time, and you know how on the rewatchables they call it the Dion Waiters Award. Like, who made the most out of their time on screen? Tom Arnold gets the Dion Waiters Award. He's in this movie for maybe 4 minutes, and is great every time he's on the screen.
Yeah, he turns into anger management guy into, like, the world's best background hacker. It's like, it was quite the arc for Tom Arnold in this movie.
Who did you like more in this movie? Was it Tom Arnold or was it Anthony Anderson? Because both
were Anthony Anderson.
Both were very, very
funny. Anthony Anderson was one. I would argue Anthony Anderson was my favorite character. That's his fifth car.
When he got handcuffed to the grill of the car was hilarious.
It was great. And then he's in the club scene is great. And then he cowers at the end. We'll get to it at the end of the podcast. But I think Anthony Anderson was easily the best character in this entire movie.
We're introduced to DMX, who goes to visit his friend who is locked up. After leaving the joint, DMX and Anthony Anderson go car shopping, and DMX leaves with a brand new Ferrari.
Johnson got a fat ass. I got some for you, Miss Johnson.
Steven Seagal just is casually going for a late night stroll while interrupting some criminal activity. Latrell is making a drug deal, but Steven crashes the party. Latrell gets away, but the bus that Steven Seagal breaks up was actually being run by an undercover. He undoes 3 months of work in the process. I wrote this down in my notes. This part continued a scene of Steven Seagal was just always in the right place at the right time. Like every single time. It kind of reminded me of that line from The Wire, how you know how the little guys are just always there for the incredible shit?
Yep.
That's how Steven Seagal was. He was always around for, how are you just casually riding around and wait, there's a $1 billion drug deal happening.
They make Detroit seem like the size of Topeka. So, yeah, I mean, Detroit's not that big. There's not that much criminal activity going on in that city in early 2000s. Steven Seagal was where he needed to be, in the 15th Precinct.
Is this your favorite DMX movie? Because he has a couple of these kind of movies. He has Romeo Must Die.
By the way, all done by the same director.
Okay, yeah, Cradle to the Grave is another one.
Yeah, he did all three of these movies.
Okay, yeah, because DMX had, I would say he had a little bit of a run. He had Belly also as one of the movies that he was in. He probably has four or five movies that he's in around this time
frame. I would say this was my favorite because I thought Steven Seagal was better than Jet Li. So I'll take Exit Wounds over Cradle of the Grave any day.
Can't remember which one it was. Which is the one that has Gabrielle Union? I really like that one. The one with Aaliyah is a little bit hit or miss to me.
That's Romeo Must Die.
Okay, because that one, because Anthony Anderson's also in that one too, where he has to play gay to kind of seduce that guy so they could break into something. I like that one.
It's pretty clear the studio signed them up for a 3-movie picture, and they had to do all three. It didn't matter how they did or how good they were.
They did get it done. So our friend Mr. Boyd gets sent to traffic duty. That is a staple in any cop demotion. Oh, you get put on the beat.
And there's always an accident. No matter what, there's an accident at some intersection, and everybody's all pissed off.
Might be time to consider a new line of work for our friend. Well, the cops are having a tase off in the locker room, and it's time for Boyd to step up. He fails, but this wasn't a fair fight. Boyd is given the name of the drug dealer he tried to bring down by a fellow officer. We now know DMX's name, Latrell Walker. Boyd heads to an office to find a family tied up in the middle of a robbery attempt. The attempt is successful. The property vault was hit, and 50 kilos of heroin were stolen. No more of his lone wolf act. If Boyd is going to solve this thing, he's gonna have a partner, George, who has the 411 on exactly what's going on at the 15.
Can I ask you just a brief question? Yeah, going back to how you just started that, do you ever think you could take a tase?
No chance.
That's those guys were just like taking 100 volts just standing up. It doesn't matter how strong you are, you're getting tased. That was one of the most ridiculous scenes in the entire movie.
My big thing is, whatever I'm currently doing, if the cops tell me that the taser is coming out, no thanks. I'd rather get pepper sprayed than you tase me if those are my two options.
Like, they portrayed it as if this big, strong guy, because he's got big muscles, can take... It adds no difference. A tase is a tase. Those guys standing up was one of the most ridiculous scenes of the movie.
He did eat that tase, though. He was...
It was insane.
He absolutely ate the tase.
Give him 100.
This, if you were going to make a cop movie, and you don't really want to, like, go into left field or anything, I mean, this is the most cookie-cutter plot for any cop movie.
Yes.
Good cop comes into a dirty precinct. The commissioner maybe doesn't know what's going on behind the scenes, but this guy is going to come and clean it up. The cop kind of goes off on his lone wolf, but no, we can't have you doing this.
He's got a hesitant partner that kind of is in, but not really in. Yeah.
This is the basis of every single cop movie.
And that's what I'll watch every time. It's a fine plot to go with for me.
So we head to TK's club, Latrell's friend from the dealership who is counting cash. Well, what do you know? Steven Seagal shows up, and he gets into a fight with both of the bouncers and the club owner. Meanwhile, DMX get away from George as they have a standoff. Boyd goes to see Latrell's friend, who we find out later that is his brother, in jail, but he's no help and refuses to cooperate. I did really like the club scene. The fight was kind of fun. It was different. It wasn't my favorite in the movie, but I liked it.
What I couldn't figure out, as a 15-year-old kid watching this for the first time, was this a strip club? Is this how all clubs are like? I mean, there's just naked girls inside, like, glass statues. As a 15-year-old, I was very intrigued about if this was real life.
Yeah, as now as we've gotten older, and I'm not going to say I've never had any club nights like movies portray it, but those are, like, very special, like, one-off. Maybe it's because I just grew up in the Midwest, so I didn't have this. I've been to my share of clubs. There ain't never just girls dancing with their titties out.
No.
That's never how the club goes.
I've been to clubs, too. The dance floor's never packed. Like, they always made the dance floor seem like you just had to, you know, walk through and get... It's never like that. There's no one on the dance floor like that.
I would say the three things that movies overrate the most, it's clubs. Clubs are never like, maybe they were back in the late 90s. Never when me and you were going out were clubs like that. They make raves seem like the absolute greatest time. Like there's 1,000 people at the rave. It's wall to wall. Everybody's doing
ecstasy. And it's always in like an abandoned warehouse district.
every single time, and college parties. College parties were fun. They are never how they're portrayed in the movies.
Absolutely not. College parties, it's like the basement of a frat house is always portrayed as like the coolest place on earth. It is not.
Yeah, it's like 10 people that you know. It's like 20 people that you don't know, and everybody's standing around drinking.
In the movies, you're playing beer pong, and everybody's cheering you on. In real life, you're playing beer pong, and nobody else is watching.
That is how every single college party in the movie.
But that is a great... I do think that it was a really good scene. Like, his partner gets hit in the back of the head by the tube of... By four as DMX tries to get away, he's like, he's trying to figure out his, you know, Steven Seagal. I think that was actually a really pivotal scene in the movie.
So Boy continues to get information from his partner George on a past arrest, and one name continues to drop: Montini, a fellow police officer. My suspicions were right, and Montini and Latrell are working together. Montini is putting together a big score, and he wants $5 million in the process. Well, Mr. Boy goes back to Tom Arnold for a deep dive. We need to learn more about Walker.
About 6 months ago, Latrell's little brother Sean gets popped, right? Now, he claims the heroin was planted, but the cops made the charges stick. Next thing you know, your pal Latrell's back in town.
That's why he was visiting him.
Now, I had my sources run a check on Sean also, and the kid's set for life financially.
How? From who?
He has a trust fund set up in his name for millions, but he can't touch it until he's 25.
Who set it up for him?
I'm getting to that. Sean also has another brother, Leon, or so I thought. Now, Leon Rawlins and Latrell Walker are the same person.
Boyd pulls up on his boss at dinner as the two are still trying to feel each other out if they can trust one another. Walker goes on to meet with Montini, and we learn the whole 15 is in on the deal. This is some widespread corruption. Tom Arnold brings his finding backs to Boyd, and we learn how the drug operation works. It was a job well done. Very stereotypical cop here. It's one dirty cop we found out, and the Montini being dirty was just the most obvious. Like, I knew from the moment I saw him.
Yeah, the moment he, drug deal with Latrell in the apartment building. Yeah, that was obvious from the jump.
Then they show us the scene, and I guess the purpose of the Taze scene is to show you how kind of lawless this precinct is, and then in a way it kind of pays itself off, because all the people that were there, right there in the middle of the tasing, they're also in this drug ring.
Yeah, they were basically a mafia inside of a police precinct.
Almost every movie makes it seem like this is how drugs get onto the street. The cops take the drugs and the cops put... This is basically the theme of American Gangster.
I was going to say, this is how American Gangster starts.
As Boyd is giving chase, Montini and some goons run him off the road, taking him hostage. They're going to kill our favorite police officer. But he fights his way through, resulting in more wild shootouts and fiery car chases. Boyd finally catches up to Latrell and is shown his operation. Things aren't what they seem. Walker is actually trying to uncover police corruption. The 15 is a cesspool, some type of hood vigilante. Walker has a meet scheduled with Montini for midnight.
This is where... I have the big question. If they had gone and made the decision that DMX was just like trying to clear his brother's name, the movie takes a big jump. But then they made this whole pivot where he is a multimillionaire, electronics expert, surveillance expert, cameras everywhere. If they had just said, DMX, your brother was wrongly framed, I'm trying to get him out, and it was an even simpler plot. This movie is above a 6.0 on IMDb. They went too far with the electronics and millionaire part for me.
They did try to make DMX far more sophisticated as a character.
Correct.
Than I think he would. And later on in the movie, it doesn't really pay off. Like, I don't think we're spoiling anything. In the end, whenever the conflict is resolved, they just hand the police the tape of all of the police corruption, and then the movie just ends. Like, wait, hold
after
on.
After they kill everybody. Like, you know, yeah, I think... That scene where they fight in Latrell's parking lot and then he goes up and reveals the whole operation, they overdid it. They oversold his entire character.
Why is Eva Mendez in this movie?
I don't have a good answer for you. No. By the way, now that I'm thinking about it, I've done three episodes. This is my second Eva Mendez movie.
Like, no clue why Eva Mendez's character. Now, I'm never going to be mad to look at Eva Mendez. She had no role in the movie. She is on the computer for just a little bit, and she is there at the very end of the movie to walk off of DMX. She's not on screen in any other scene in the movie.
There was not a big female presence in the movie, so maybe that's why they made it. Outside of Mulcahy, there's not another female part in the movie.
No, you're right.
I'm missing it.
You're right. And that's why, to your point about there was no reason to get into this DMX, you know, like his behind the scenes, like you take us to his headquarters, you introduce these characters and they're not really in the movie. Like we could have cut that part out. And you're right. Maybe had a flashback to how his brother got caught up in something. Like there was a way to kind of just solely focus in on DMX's brother was framed by the police doing this stuff. And now DMX is motivated by vengeance for his brother. He didn't need to be Batman, essentially.
No, that the electronics and the, you know, the multi-million-dollar loft and all that. It took a simple plot. It made it slightly more unrealistic, where if they actually had made it even more simple, I think the whole movie works a little bit better. That was my big frustration with Exit Wounds.
Boyd is heading to meet up with the captain to tell her what's going on in her shop, but they get ambushed.
Wild stuff.
They get ambushed, resulted in another car chase. There's a lot of folks that want Boyd dead. This car wreck proves fatal, killing the captain while Boyd is ejected from the vehicle that lost its door in the process. This is by far and away the best scene in the movie. It's not even close.
And the most unrealistic, but still a great scene.
That part also not even close, that this is the most unrealistic. There's probably five things that happen in this scene that are unrealistic. When the door flies off, I'm sorry, you fall out of the vehicle. He basically is using it like an extra window and he's shooting around here. They're dipping out of traffic. They get into the big car wreck. He then gets out of the car. He then jumps over a car the long way. Not like the sideways.
Yeah,
not
the Kobe
like,
way.
I'm saying the car is coming at him, and to avoid being hit, he doesn't roll out of the way. He just Mario long jumps over the car and then lands on his feet. That's the most athletic thing I've seen since Saquon Barkley a couple weeks
ago. You're forgetting they also took a Land Rover off the third floor of a parking garage and landed perfectly fine.
This is the best scene in the movie.
The axles were fine. The wheels were fine. The Land Rover was fine. It was like it was, you know, the safari jungle with the Land Rover. That was a great commercial for that car company.
Is this your favorite scene in the movie?
The club scene's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
It's just something like this scene and the opening scene perfectly describe this movie.
Yes.
It's Steven Seagal being a badass.
I don't know if you noticed this. This is one of the things that I always laugh at when I go back and watch these movies from like the early 2000s. The sound effects that they make when they're like kicking people or like trying to block a punch, like whoosh, is like a transition radio sounder. It's just so 2000s. It was so great.
How many car explosions do you think there are in this movie now thinking back to it?
So there's three scenes of car explosions. I don't know how many cars actually exploded, but there's three scenes of it.
There's some cars that explode in this scene that I'm thinking, that's not what would happen if you hit that car. If you were driving this big car, you just hit the back of the other car. That is not causing an explosion.
Have you ever seen 21 Jump Street, new one? When they like shoot the gasoline tank and they always think it's going to explode, but nothing actually happens. It's exactly like that. Cars never explode the way we think they're supposed to.
So it's time to bring these dirty cops down once and for all. Latrell is off to the meet. Boyd brings the chief into the mix, but we learn that he's the one behind the whole operation. It's time for the final showdown as DMX fights Montini and Boyd stops Strut.
Another big issue with the movie here. So first we think Montini is the bad guy. Then we think the sergeant is the big bad guy. Then we think the whole police commissioner, I don't know, what was his job?
I think he was the chief,
The captain, whatever it is. We had three different layers of bad guys, and they were all on the same teams. Like, they didn't make a final boss, and I think they made that mistake.
We were talking about this before we sat down recording. We say unrealistic things. Can you even explain the physics to me of how DMX is shooting that shotgun? Like, he ties his belt.
I think we should paint the picture for people who haven't seen it. So DMX is lying behind a sack of flour, let's say. He takes his belt off, ties one loop to the end of the shotgun and one loop to the trigger. And as the guys walk in, he's throwing the shotgun up in the air over the barrier. And because the shotgun is tied to the trigger and the other end of the barrel, it's firing off rounds. And it's 8 feet in the air above him. It is insane physics.
And he doesn't just do it one time. He is repeatedly firing.
Oh, he's mowing people down like target practice. It was insane.
Is this not a pump shotgun? Because the whole scene, it just doesn't really make, like, how is the gun firing? How are you doing any
of this? Also, you've seen a lot of movies like this. If I'm the second bad guy walking in and I see someone dead lying on the floor, do I not think there's someone else in the room? What's the point of hiding? Like, just fire. Just shoot. It was, oh, God, it was just so ridiculous.
You are right that the movie, I mean, you are right that there are three different bad guys and the movie comes in. It seems so unnecessary to continue to build these layers. It would have been a little bit better if you had told, like, if you had just kind of set up, hey, Montini is working for somebody. And then in the end, the big reveal is it is actually the police chief. But you're right. The movie has you convinced that it's Montini. And then Montini has a team of other cops.
Yeah, he's
but
the low man on the totem pole for, what, 75 of the 101-minute movie? Like, it just didn't make any sense to me how they did that.
DMX wins his fight. Boyd also wins his fight. We haven't even talked about Boyd, as Boyd kind of stopped a helicopter just with his own strength.
Yeah, he just pulled the helicopter out of the air by dragging his feet on a rocky roof.
And then he ties it to a chimney.
that makes a little more sense, not holding on for dear life and dragging your feet across a rocky roof.
But wouldn't the helicopter just rip the chimney off and just fly away? Like, that chimney is strong enough to hold down that helicopter?
It's probably not strong enough to hold down the helicopter, but it's probably strong enough to hold down the ladder attached to the helicopter. That actually makes a little bit of sense.
The movie concludes with Latrell handing over the evidence to the authority, which is going to free his brother. Boyd goes back to anger management with the guys. TK is now a movie star, and this concludes Exit Wounds. This is one of the few movies that we've had on this podcast that I stuck around for the credit scene. That scene is hilarious.
With Tom Arnold?
Where you got Tom Arnold and Anthony Anderson just going back and forth and telling jokes for the next 8 minutes of the movie.
It was great.
Had nothing to do with the plot of the movie. It's just funny. This is one of the better credit scenes that we've had.
They did a very good job with Tom Arnold's character. He was funny, but also relevant. And Anthony Anderson was that same role to DMX that Tom Arnold was to Steven Seagal. Yeah, I think those four characters were very good in the movie.
Do you think the police would have believed DMX had he not had all the surveillance and behind the scenes? Like, what DMX is accusing, now he ended up being right, is widespread police corruption. Is maybe having all the behind the scenes and the videos and the cameras and the technology, is that the only way maybe to 100% prove his brother's innocence? Because the police are not going to believe that their own are actually the biggest criminals.
Yeah, I mean, he would need evidence. I just think they overdid the evidence that he need. I mean, he was the CIA. He was a one-man CIA for like a large portion of the movie. I just think they oversold his ability to do surveillance and technology to bring down an entire police precinct.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, this movie has an approval rating of 32% based on 65 reviews. The site's critical consensus reads, it probably goes without saying, but Exit Wounds is loaded with plot holes and bad dialogues. The New York Times, for those in search of an action-filled escapist entertainment who are willing to jettison expectations of credibility and the nearest popcorn tub, Exit Wounds will do.
That's right. That's a very accurate representation.
I can't disagree with that at all. This is a fine 90-minute action movie. This is a very rewatchable action movie. It is fun. It is not a classic by any means. I don't think it's a bad movie by any means. It is a mindless, time-wasting, time-filling. This is the movie, we've all been in this category, where you were just searching around on Netflix for something to watch, and you end up spending 20 minutes looking for something to watch, and then you're like, man, I'm just going to go to sleep. This is a movie that if you quickly decide, oh, I haven't seen Exit Wounds in a while, I'll just turn it on. You will not be disappointed if you watch this.
I also think you and I, again, are in the same age range. This came out in 2001, so I'm, you know, 15, 16 years old. This is a perfect 15 or 16-year-old movie. Like, not overly violent, not overly sexual. Like, this is a perfect high school movie for a kid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think it fits all those categories. Plus, like, you're listening to CDs back then. Like, I was just kind of getting into rap, like, learning about DMX. Now DMX is acting like Ja Rule was kind of at the same time. This was a perfect 2001 movie for 15, 16-year-old Steven Spector.
I do wish that we had had maybe a little bit more of expansive of a soundtrack, given the fact that DMX is in this movie. We heard that, ain't no sunshine.
I love that he redid the Bill Withers song.
We heard that song at least four separate times.
Yeah,
in
we
the
did.
Movie. If you just play it at the beginning and the end, he's riding around in the car listening to this. Like, they were really trying to pump that as a single.
Yeah, they could have used a little more DMX in the movie, but I still actually really like that song. I really like the remake that he did for Bill Withers.
I did like, there was one scene where he's walking into it and they play this like Jadakiss song. I was like, man, Jadakiss can just rap. Like,
I love Jadakiss.
Just a timeless flow.
I love Jadakiss growing up.
What is something you think this movie gets right?
I'll go back to what I said a couple minutes ago. I think Anthony Anderson and Tom Arnold were perfectly done in their small roles. Like, they were the perfect yin to the main character's yang. I think they did that really well.
I'm going to say Steven Seagal. We had four or five of these action heroes. This is basically what Jean-Claude Van Damme was. We're going to put you in a 90-minute action movie. We're going to blow some shit up, and people are going to go to the movie theaters. Who is that person now? Like, John Wick movies, you mentioned how dark movies have gotten. That's not what John Wick is.
John Wick's kind of dark.
No, I'm saying John Wick is dark. That's not what this movie is. This is a movie that they could have played on MTV.
Yes.
This is a movie they could have played on VH1. That's not really what John Wick is.
Yeah, I think to use the John Wick analogy, Exit Wounds is somewhat believable, right? Like, police corruption, really good cop at fighting and guns and all that. Like, we've seen that movie 1,000 times. Fast forward to 2024 when John Wick is like kind of at its peak. John Wick is just so unrealistic. It's like going from Fast and the Furious 1 to Fast and the Furious 10. It's just they've tried to make these movies so over the top that we're now having to suspend belief, whereas back in the day it was at least somewhat believable, even though you know it's not realistic.
This movie, I guess the description that called this a popcorn film, this generation of movies just doesn't really have popcorn film. If you're going to make an action movie, it's like John Wick, like a legitimate franchise.
Extraction.
It's going to be one of those movies, or it's going to be Kingsman. Like, those are real movies. Those are cinema. That's not what Exit Wounds was, or some of those early Jackie Chan movies before he became a major movie star. Like, you watch some of those early Jackie Chan movies, Rumble in the Bronx, for example.
Oh, great movie.
That's a popcorn movie. Why do you think this movie is rated below a 6.0?
I mean, if we're being fair, it's not very good actors, right? Like, Steven Seagal is not a very good actor. He's a great action hero. DMX is not a good actor. Tom Arnold's funny. TK is funny. Or Anthony Anderson's funny. The dirty cops are, you've never seen them again in any other movie. Like, this is not a great cast of characters.
I'm not really even sure if this movie is designed to be good when you think about it. Like, it just kind of pairs a lot of fun people together. Like, if you're putting DMX as the second main person in your movie, I don't know if you're really aspiring to make a good movie. I think you are aspiring to make a profitable movie, which are two different things. I'm going to say what this movie gets wrong is there are better standard laissez-faire cop movies than this one. Like, this movie, somebody handed them the cop playbook on how to make a cop movie, and they just picked new characters and put things around. There's really not a plot twist. There's nothing that catches you off guard. There's no story here. That's what I think the movie gets wrong. And the movie, to me, accomplishes what it's designed, but there is just only so high your movie is going to be rated if you make a movie like Exit Wounds.
Now that you say that, I guess the other kind of thing that they got wrong is they made it seem like the 15th Precinct was all dirty, except for Steven Seagal and his partner. I think typically in most movies, like, there's a cell of bad within a precinct. That final scene, I mean, he was taking on 40, 50 different cops, so that's probably a little more unrealistic, and that's probably something they got wrong, too.
Yeah, that's something where, to me, a very simple fix where you could have had, like, this is the drug squad unit, and the drug squad unit is dirty instead
like
of
an American gangster.
Yeah, instead of the entire precinct is dirty. This movie got a 5.6 on IMDb. Is that too much, too little, or just right?
I would say it's like a 6.1, so it's within the range of outcomes, but I would say maybe rated a little bit too low.
I think this is fair. 5.6 to me, I don't think is a bad rating for this. I would say that this is a slightly above average action movie. There are certainly far better action movies than this. But again, if you were looking for a movie that fits in that 90-minute range, if you want to watch a movie and you don't want to think too hard. You've had a hard day at work and you just want to kind of veg out. Maybe you have a drink, maybe smoke, however you like to enjoy your free time and watch a movie. This movie is 101 minutes. It's probably, you know, with credits, it's probably a 97 minute movie. This absolutely fits that criteria.
I think the 6.1 for me, a big thing baked into that is nostalgia. Like, I don't know if I enjoy this movie if I watch it for the first time now. But again, just going back to 2001, my portable DVD player, I throw my headphones on, I get a rapper that I'm just kind of learning about. Steven Seagal was kind of at the height of his thing. Tom Arnold was still pretty popular in those days. I think a big part of Exit Wounds for me is the nostalgia factor. And that's why I'd rate it a little bit higher, but I understand the 5.6.
This is a good movie where if you were on a plane and you were flying somewhere, and let's say you had a 2.5 hour flight, if you listen to a podcast and watch Exit Wounds, you had a good flight.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's a good flight. And I think that's all this movie was trying to be, and I do think that it accomplishes that.
I think it is the best of the three. Between Romeo Must Die and Cradle to the Grave.
Yeah, I like Cradle to the Grave. I'm trying to get my DMX movies, but there was one, I thought it was in this movie, where he runs up the wall in the Timberlands and does the backflip.
That was not this movie.
Yeah, no, I know it wasn't this movie. Yeah, now thinking back, Cradle to the Grave is my favorite DMX movie.
Yeah, I like Exit Wounds the most.
What's the next movie you're going to do on the podcast, man?
I'm looking for the next Paul Walker flick.
Yeah, we got to find
it. It's got to be a Paul Walker movie.
She's All That. That's what we'll do. We'll do She's All That.
That's got to be rated above a 5.
It's not.
What is that on IMDb?
It's like 5.8.
Wow.
She's All That's below a 6.
A classic movie of our childhood.
I love She's All That. That is our guy, Steven Spector, joining us on the show for his third appearance on the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. We will figure out another movie for you to do. Coming up next week, we start our Christmas movies. Four Christmases will be our movie next week, and this is probably one of my 5 favorite Christmas movies. I am very excited about it. Be sure to like, subscribe to the podcast, share it with a friend for the holiday season. That's all we can ask. We'll catch you guys next week on Bad Movies Worst Opinions.